Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living a Richer Life, life-changing talk radio, a place where like-minded people from across the country come to listen, share, and learn from topics that deal with their health, wealth, hope, and prosperity. You can participate by sharing your comments or questions from the Richer Life blog page or chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/richerlife, or by using the phone to call in. Let's join the show.
I'm Dr. Charlotte Grant Cobb.
And I'm Earl Cobb.
Welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio and episode number 10 of the Situations and Leadership Broadcast. As you know, this is a special broadcast series which gives all of us an opportunity to spend a few minutes to discuss and learn from a chapter of the new book, Situations and Leadership, Short Stories and Lifelong Lessons.
And the goal of this podcast series is to have an entertaining and hopefully insightful discussion about each of the 10 short stories. Each of the short stories are written to unpack some key lessons all of us can learn and use while addressing challenging personal and professional situations. These lessons can also strengthen our critical thinking and leadership skills. And with each of the broadcasts in this 10-part series, Charlotte and I are just honored to have two guest hosts. And tonight is no exception. They both have read the book and are here tonight to share their thoughts on the story and the lessons contained in Chapter 10, titled, I Should Have Known. First, I would like to welcome to tonight's show a longtime friend and writing partner, Jim Grigsby. Jim is the president and CEO of Jim Grigsby Consulting. He has over 25 years of healthcare financial management experience. His company provides revenue cycle analytics, project management, and management consulting solutions to provide companies and organizations long-term improvement, efficiency, and improved cash flow. Jim Grigsby Consulting helps its clients improve staff professionalism by enhancing management and communication skills. His client base includes small hospitals, specialty hospitals, academic teaching facilities, single-family practices, as well as large clinics. Jim's corporate experience and positions include Vice President of Revenue Cycle Operations for Steward Healthcare, Director of Business Development for Impact Health Services, and Regional Sales Manager for Accelerated Receivables Management, LTD. Jim is an author of 5 books. 2 of the books focuses on building practical project management and project leadership skills, in which I'm so proud to say that I am his co-author. And the other 3 books, he uses what Jim calls irreverent humor to point out human quirks to tell a good story. And Jim can tell a good story. His best-selling book is titled, Don't Tick Off the Gators, Managing Problems Before They Manage You. Jim, so glad to have you with us tonight. Welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio.
Well, thank you, Earl and Charlotte, for inviting me to participate and work with Doug. And I just hope that he and I can give the listeners the same level of expertise as the first 9 podcasts.
I'm sure you will, no doubt about that. Also, let's welcome to episode number 10 of Situations and Leadership another longtime friend and former coworker, Doug Russell. Doug is an author and retired consultant who creatively generates business results through what he calls coaching and leading. Doug has had a long and successful corporate career. I first met Doug when he was a young program manager working with DOD and the National Security Agency. I was a young program manager with Motorola's Government and Systems Technology Group in Scottsdale at the time. And I've got to admit, I wouldn't tell him this then, but even at the early stage of his career, Doug was a tough negotiator and an exceptional communicator. His corporate career also includes positions with Intel and Motorola, Freescale Semiconductor, Crane Corporation Signal Technology Division, Textron's Overwatch operation, as well as State Farm Insurance. Doug is also an author. He's the author of two books, one titled Succeeding in the Project Management Jungle, How to Manage the People Side of Projects, and a wonderfully researched and illustrated book about his family roots in the rural North Carolina titled Everyday Living, Memories of a Family from Blaine, North Carolina. Doug holds an MBA from Duke University and a bachelor's degree in electrical and computer engineering from Clemson University. Doug, good to talk to you again. Welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio.
Thank you very much, Earl. Over a 30-plus career, you were talking about, it is amazing to me how widespread all the issues are that you and Charlotte are talking about in the book. They are literally everywhere. Orgs don't know how to deal with those issue organizations. They reward functional or technical expertise. And so it's just wonderful to be involved in a discussion about, you know, how to provide good leadership. And I want to thank you and Charlotte for including me.
Well, thanks for being here with us tonight, Doug. Now, hopefully everyone in our listening audience has read the story in Chapter 10 and are ready to help us unpack some of the lessons it contains, lessons that can help enhance anyone's leadership and critical thinking skills.
And Earl, let me also welcome Jim and Doug to the show tonight. And before we start the discussion, we will first take a short break, then play a recorded synopsis of the story from Chapter 10 titled, I Should Have Known. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Living a Richer Life, Life-Changing Talk Radio, where like-minded people come to listen, share, and learn. The phone lines are now open. If you wish to join us on the air, you can call 516-418-5769. Again, that's 516-418-5769. Or you can join us on our blog page at blogtalkradio.com/richerlife. Email us at info@richerlifellc.com or tweet us at richerlifetalk. Now here's a synopsis of tonight's story and situation.
I should have known. An idea that Julie Juliet had as a young girl to help patient care assistants perform their jobs in a safer manner is what drove Julie to earn a PhD in robotics. This focused drive and tenacity eventually earned her the position of president and CEO of an $800 million privately held company. 8 years after being one of the four founders of Robotex, she was charged to do what was necessary to take the company public via an IPO. As a part of the process, the Robotex board of directors hired an independent investigator to perform a due diligence review of the company. The review included all aspects of the company's operations, including the background of Robotex's senior management team. Following the review, Julie began to discover that even though she had significantly developed her executive leadership skills, she missed a vital executive skill, sound decision making. The independent investigation unveiled three poor decisions that Julie made over the previous 8 years that would unfortunately torpedo the company's IPO and alter its future.
Welcome back. Let me remind our callers that if you would like to share your thoughts on the situation found in Chapter 10 or have any comments, please push one on your phone. That way we can recognize you, bring you into our screen room, and then bring you into the discussion. You can also engage with us via our chat room on our blog page, email us at info@richerlifellc.com or tweet us at Richer Life Talk. Now, Earl will lead our guest panel in a review of the story contained in Chapter 10 of Situations and Leadership and respond to as many of the questions at the end of the chapter as possible, as well as any questions and comments we get from you, our listening audience.
Thanks, Charlotte. Now, as you've heard in the synopsis of tonight's story, the idea that the main character, Julie Juliet, had as a young girl drove her to earn a PhD in robotics and eventually led her to the position of president and CEO of an $800 million privately held startup company. Now, by the end of the story, she learned that unknowingly she failed to do some key things when it came to making good decisions and eventually lost it all. So let's begin our discussion tonight by asking both Jim and Doug to respond to this question. How would you describe Julie's situation toward the end of the story in 5 words or less? And why? Jim, you first.
I would say regret, embarrassment, failure, and that she's seeking redemption. And I think that she knows she didn't perform professionally. She's used to succeeding. She didn't know how to handle it, but she'd like to try to help other people avoid making the same mistakes. And I think that's to be admired. But mostly, she was in a situation where she had failed for the first time in her life.
Very good. I'm sure we'll get back to that as we discuss some of the intricate part of the scenarios that she was a part of. Doug, how would you describe Julie's situation toward the end of the story and why in 5 words or less?
I say inspired dreamer crashes into reality. Julie was inspired by the idea of creating a product that would have helped her beloved Grammy. She was well-educated, smart, had good executive leadership skills around what she had started out doing, but I think she was not a leader by experience or training for the IPO. And the real world has a habit of rearing its ugly head eventually, and it sure did in this case.
That's good. That's good. And we're going to see as we discuss it here how she actually thought that she had did okay until, of course, hindsight. Now, for those who have read the story in Chapter 10, you know that Robotex, which is the company that Juliet founded, along with three partners, was rapidly growing in sales and preparing to raise over $650 million by going public when Julie discovered three poor decisions that she had made over the previous 8 years. With decisions that would unfortunately torpedo the company's plan to go public and would alter her future. Now, of all the skills that must be learned and perfected to consistently succeed in business or even in life, good decision-making, to me, seems to be a skill that most of us take for granted until it bites us. And when it does, we look for something or someone else to blame. Now, Jim and Doug, let's do this in the time that we have tonight. Let's unpack the lessons in Chapter 10 by focusing on the three situations where Julie's decision-making process seemed to be inadequate and led up to the three findings that surfaced during the IPO due diligence. Now, the first situation surfaced when Julie decided to team with her three partners, Joe, Jack, and Johnny, as a way to realize her idea of inventing a robot, right, for caring for people who might be bedridden. Let's talk about that situation, and where did her decision-making process let her down? Jim, would you share a little about Julie's decision to partner, first of all, with Joe, Jack, and Johnny, and where do you think her decision-making process let her down?
I think the first thing is that she felt very comfortable with the three J's, and that she just felt that, as you said in the book, the synergy, that all this will work because we feel good together. It's a comfort level for all of us. This can't fail. And she got caught up in that sense of opportunity, and that clouded her judgment. And we all know clouded judgment does not make good decisions. And then because of that, she took on the CEO role, and while she felt she had executive skills, executive decision-making, she didn't. It was another example of somebody who's very technically strong and who had some leadership being thrust into a position that they couldn't handle it. And she was definitely in, as I said, clouded judgment, and she was in over her head.
Yep, I agree. You recall in the story when she first met the three guys in this incubator, this lab at the university, she thought they were three nerds, remember? She wasn't impressed at all with them, right? And it wasn't until she got to know them a little, but until she found out that they were working on some technology that would fit into her goal of creating this robot, right? So now all of a sudden, like one of our guests said a few shows ago, the shiny coins, you know, the idea of getting that technology sort of overrode her thought process that maybe I should check these guys out first. Dove, do you agree? And at what point do you think Julie's decision-making process let her down?
I do agree. The way I phrase it is she went with the emotional and adrenaline rush that she got in finding three people who seemed to share her vision, who could help her reach her dream of a product that would have helped her Grammy. I didn't see what she was using really as a decision-making process at all. To her, the three guys probably felt like manna from heaven, at least for a while, but she really wasn't robustly thinking about how to find good partners.
Right. Now, have either of you found yourself in a similar situation that you could share our listening audience where, you know, you sort of got together with someone or some situation and later on you found out that it wasn't the case?
I did. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I'll go ahead. Yeah. So I had a consulting job in Austin, Texas one time a few years ago. It was downtown, high-rise environment, big bucks location. And as many of you probably know about Austin, it fancies itself as a sort of Silicon Valley, especially now. It calls itself Silicon Hills. This opportunity, this project, I was told, might lead to being a VP in our IPO. The project was extremely exciting and interesting. They had a worldwide streaming event that was coming up at South by Southwest, which is a worldwide event now. The software, though, wasn't where the CEO thought it was when he had committed the team. And the team was horrified that he had committed them to the date. And when I started, we had 6 weeks before the South by Southwest effort. So on Christmas Eve, I walked into the conference room where the entire design team was arrayed around a table. And they were scared to death. I have never been in a room of people so scared. And I've been in a lot of conference rooms with design teams and all sorts of business and engineering teams, but never a group.
I know you have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this, to them, this seemed like an impossible job. But I used every bit of my leadership skills and experience, a lot of the things that Earl talked about, I probably learned from observing him. I matched my approach to what I thought would work with them. In an analogy, if they were making a movie, they basically had a few scenes done, had no connecting tissue, no flow, and they weren't sure what they were missing when I came into that job. But we got it done.
That's great. Jim?
And the day I just got a little bit more. Sorry. I got to
yeah, go
get
ahead,
to the part where it affected me. Yeah. And the day after a successful demo, they fired me. And I asked myself why for a long, long time, kind of like Julie did. So what it came down to is I'd ignored many alarm bells. The CEO was not a good leader. He was not involved day to day. He jumped from one shiny object to another. My direct manager spent 90% of the time interacting with me, asking which engineer or manager had screwed up. It's got to be somebody's fault, he said. But the design team was great, and they were wonderful to work with. The streaming event wound up being a great success. They never went IPO, though, and I'll leave it at that so the guilty can't be identified.
That's great, and I'm sure we've got people who are listening to this podcast now or will listen to it going to say, geez, I remember that in my life as well. Jim, what about you?
Doug, I think I was season two of your story. In 1999, I joined a document imaging company, and it was the same thing. It was a startup, the promise of ownership and dot-com growth opportunity. I mean, the way they talked when I first went there, I'd have been on the rocket with Branson the other day. I'd have had so much money. And it was, one guy had done some of this with another company, and we got together, and they had these grand plans, and everything had to be a grand slam home run. Nobody wanted to hit a single or a double. They had to go big, and we would propose these projects for hospitals for $2.5-3.5 million in a phase, for three or four phases. And nobody was biting in it, but we had a lot of very successful small implementations. They wouldn't build on that. And it just it has hit me that this wasn't going to go the way I wanted to. And I felt underappreciated. I felt disrespected. It was too expensive. And as Doug said, the CEO had adult ADHD, and he would just, take off on in the middle of a sentence and go the other way. And it was just a terrible fit. And, the good news is out of that, I made two very good friends for life, and it convinced me to go back to consulting. But like Julie, it was a real eye-opener that it's very easy to get sucked into these things. You can understand how people lose money investing in things like that. But it sounds really good. And fortunately for me, I didn't lose money. I lost time. But it was really kind of professionally embarrassing being associated with something like that and then have to go and talk to people and say, well, it just didn't work out and I left. But, it's not fun.
Yeah, that's neat. The second situation that surfaced with Julie, and Doug, I'm sure you've been there like I have, as far as these patents are concerned. Julie reviewed the patents that Jack, who eventually became Robotech's CPO, had been awarded when he was a young engineer, okay? And, of course, those were the patents that were now a critical part of the new robotic systems design that the company had developed and was beginning to roll out. Now, Doug, tell us a little about how this situation came about, and where was the opportunity for Julie during this process to do something better or make a better decision?
Yeah, as a lot of people on the phone probably know, intellectual property is a quagmire in tech companies. She might have been a great technologist, but IP needs a focused and experienced person, especially if you're going to take a company into an IPO like this group was. And I think, she should have probably hired somebody or at least a consultant for some period of time to kind of take her through that process. And so to kind of tie that back to the book, going back to chapter 1, page 16, where you all wrote that there were three questions to Marilyn Mason Taylor by her mentor. First, Julie did not evaluate her skill set against what was needed. She had no training for leading in this situation, and her actions were neither those of a manager or a leader to me. They were more of a visionary, the person who had the idea.
Very good. This is, to me, representative of something that is more commonplace. I mean, here we're talking technology and patents and intellectual property. But what I've found in many situations where you've got smart, eager young people, or old people, matter of fact, who really get into wanting to get something done, whether it's start a business or do this or do that, and they get so caught up in the now, into the moment. I would suspect that when Julie was in the process of of putting those designs into the system, she was more focused on getting something to work. But she never envisioned that this would turn into what it turned into. And that's how a lot of people are. They start out, and because you, like I say in one of my books, you don't see the end, go to the end first, you know, you weren't thinking about it at the time. Okay, and that happens so often in so many things in life. Jim, your thoughts?
You know, I agree. In fact, I saw a commercial the other day about somebody had started some kind of service, and then it was on YouTube, and it went viral, and she had to buy 20 laptops the next day. And I think that's the kind of situation she got into. Julie had a lot of technical expertise. She designed the product. She had a great vision, as you and Doug both said. And she had a goal to help people, which is wonderful. But that didn't translate into management thinking. And I go back to that. She felt she had it, but she didn't. As a CEO, she has to think strategically, both long and short term, and she didn't do that. She was more focused on product development and sales and not running the company and getting prepared for the IPO. And I agree with Doug 100%. She should have brought somebody in to help her do that. Best in a couple hundred thousand dollars could have saved her millions and a heartbreak.
Yeah. And I don't think that her three partners, okay, were deceiving or malicious or anything like that, but they also did not have the vision and the foresight and the understanding in terms of, well, suppose this turns into a business and we make profit and we want to go public, you know, even if Julie didn't ask the question, if Jack in this case had any of those skills, he would have thought, yeah, Julie, but there was two other engineers on this patent with me. So why don't I go now and go find out who they are, where they are, and see if I can make sure that if we use it, it'll be okay. Okay.
You know,
too many.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, there was nothing malicious in their intent, but again, it was ignorance more than anything else, and I don't mean that they were ignorant. Their thought process didn't include thinking about everything involved with running a business.
Right. And when you think back, that's probably why Zuckerberg went out and got these guys who had done this and done that on his board, right? You know, you can have all this energy and all this young foresight, okay? But if you haven't been from one end to the other a few times to truly understand how that goes, you know, you're in trouble from the start.
Doomed.
Yep, doomed. Now, let's take a look at the third situation that surfaced when Julie made the decision to allow Johnny, who eventually during the time of the IPO due diligence was the vice president and director of human resources for Robotex. Well, sometime before that, there was an issue within the company, and Julie was so heads down into the technology, like Jim has mentioned a couple of times, that she, even as CEO, she didn't feel the need to spend much time there. So she told Johnny, that's okay, you go ahead. And you handle it, you work it out. And once you settle this disagreement that we have with this ex-employee, you know, and this incident, let's seal it and move on. So I'm sure she never thought about it before. Then all of a sudden, right, here comes this due diligence reviewing her situation, that particular situation, and found out, okay, that, yeah, Robotex had a claim filed against them. I don't know if it was a suit or not at that time, that one of their employees weren't treating, you know, this employee, female employee, properly, right? And so Robotex settled on it. But what Julie didn't realize was that that employee was Johnny. Now, What about that, Jim? I mean, how can you allow yourself to fall into that situation?
You know, it's probably a lot more common than we think, but I think that what she did, she just put too much trust in her partners. And because of that, again, her judgment was clouded, and she failed to make a sound leadership decision. Now, Ronald Reagan said years ago, trust but verify. Well, Julie didn't verify. She thought, okay, Johnny's going to do this, get it resolved. He wouldn't do anything wrong because he hadn't done anything with her. She didn't know all the details. And she went on the premise that, you know, they were being open with her, and they weren't, and it cost her. And it gets back to, as a leader, you trust people, you believe them, but you have to have the foresight and the courage to challenge them to make sure they're telling you the truth.
Yep, very good. Doug, your thoughts?
Yeah, I do agree with Jim. I'm just going to refer back to the previous question and say she really didn't have the skill set either by training or experience to structure a corporation that would meet the SEC requirements for an IPO. This part of the story I just found really incredible that she would allow that to happen. But like Jim said, it happens a lot more than we think.
Yep. Yeah, it really does. And it happens often within other settings as well. You know, let's talk a little about what does it mean to be in a leadership position of any company, any organization, or either, you know, of your home, right? What does that mean in terms of having some type of decision-making process that you have thought of, that you've tested, and that you can trust in making, you know, very, you know, important and key decisions? What are some of those thought processes, Doug, that you have when it comes to making a final decision on something that could have significant consequence one way or the other?
Yeah, with teams that I would start with, I would always go and talk to them at their desk to get a sense of just how complex their thinking was or advanced their thinking was around trying to do things in a systematic way, because engineers don't typically do things in a systematic way. So that would be the biggest thing. And then from there, matching what I had learned to a process that was basically the same everywhere I went, but varied a bit based on the situation. That'd be the best way I could put it. And it needs to seem simple to the team.
Right. Jim, your thoughts?
I think Doug's analogy is great, especially for technical things. But in consulting, I think the thing that I learned is you can't believe everything people tell you. Not that they're lying or not that they're hiding something, although sometimes they are, that you just have to make sure you have enough information so that you don't get caught off guard making a decision or recommendation that is based on erroneous information. I had a situation when I first started. I was doing a project in Cincinnati years ago, and the director didn't tell me that some of the things that I thought were classified as commercial were actually something else. So I'm making all these projections on how much money they can make. And then at the meeting, she says, well, no, that's not all commercial insurance. Some of it's other stuff. And I look like an idiot. So I learned right then, okay, you have to make sure your information is correct.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. Now, we are getting close to the 10-minute point here. So before we get too close to the end, since this is our last show, and Charlotte and I want to share a few comments to all of our listeners who've been with us over these past 5 months. Let's start now by asking Jim and Doug to sort of give us a final thought on the topic tonight and the relevance that the idea of making good decisions can have not only in a business and organization, but certainly in life in general, any profession. Jim, you first.
Well, I was thinking, you know, something I read about Napoleon. He was getting ready to invade Vienna, and his general thought he was taking too much time making a plan. And Napoleon said, If you're going to take Deanna, take Deanna. And you translate that to, if you're going to lead, lead. You know, you need to prepare for what you're doing, learn all you can about the situation, listen to people around you, stay involved, make sure you're getting regular feedback that you can trust, ask questions and challenge answers that your people are giving you until you're confident that the information is correct. If you're in doubt, you keep probing. And you need to remember as a leader that your professional reputation is at stake. Nobody else is going to protect it but you, so you have to make that a priority to protect your integrity as a leader by making sure you're making decisions based on the best possible information.
Very good. Good advice. Doug?
Yeah, first of all, I would say following the process that Charlotte and Earl outlined in this book will help a lot. It's a simple process. It's not easy to get the kind of results that we're trying to get in these projects, but this process will give you a chance to win. It'll get you going without spinning your wheels too much. As far as leadership, everything you do as a leader, every word you say, every motion you take is observed by the team, and it reflects on the outcome. Leadership is everything, in my view. And then I just have two thoughts for folks. Look for your weak spot in meeting your dreams. Mine was finding a seemingly impossible project with complex team dynamics to work on. That was candy for me. For Julie, the dream was a product for her loved one. And secondly, this is something that I found a lot of people just had never thought of. What skill are you overusing? Julie, it was her visionary skill. She was using those just way too much. With me, I didn't evaluate the senior team that I was coming into in that situation in Austin adequately because I was so caught up in the idea of this is impossible, but we can do it. So look out for those kind of situations is what I would advise your listeners.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm reminded of something that we wrote a few years ago about ignorance is the enemy of good decisions.
Yep.
And I think if you think back through all the comments we've made in the last 20, 30 minutes, we didn't call it ignorance, but it definitely is important to realize what you know and what you don't know about a decision or making a decision or a process. And I think that's what we've all sort of summarized here. So I believe, unfortunately, those will have to be our last words for the night. So before we give it back over to Charlotte, let me say that Doug and Jim, it's been a real pleasure. You know, the thing about life as you live and get older like we have, and you reflect back on situations and relationships. I mean, I can think of so many situations that Doug and I have been in, and this was, 25 years ago, you know, in a situation. And Jim and I have gone through, seems like yesterday. And Jim and I remember when we were writing the two books on project leadership and going back and forth and all of those moments. When it comes down to being able to find people or ask people to come and be a part of a situation and leadership series like this, one of the criteria that Charlotte and I initially started was we're not looking for platitudes. We're not looking for what you would normally hear about what it takes to be a leader. We want to hear from people who've been there, done that, and not only that, they've got the ability to communicate at a ground level, because that's where it really happens. And unfortunately, young people going into these situations, you don't know that. You know, you don't know what you don't know. But certainly I think you and all of our guests that's been a part of this podcast have sort of let their guard down, have shared things from the heart, said things from just being there and going through the school of hard knocks. And I really appreciate all of them. And Jim, you and Doug have been right there and stellar with all of our guest hosts. Really thank you
thank
guys
you.
For coming on and being a part of this series.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Charlotte, it's on you.
Very good. And I also want to thank our guest panel, Jim Grigsby and Doug Russell, for joining us tonight. You not only were great, but you have been just wonderful partners and colleagues through the years. And also just say a quick word for all of our guests for the Situations and Leadership series. It has been a joy to work with everybody and to really just lean in and glean from their wisdom and their leadership and their desire and willingness to give back and share to our audience. Earl?
Yes. Yeah, and we want to thank our listening audience. With this being our final episode of Situations and Leadership, Charlotte and I hope that you have not only enjoyed this special series, but that you feel the experience has provided you at least a few nuggets of insight that will help you be better prepared, because preparation is so key to improve the outcomes and challenges of any situation that you run into on your job, in your business, or in your life.
Absolutely. And remember, everyone, you can listen to all 10 episodes of this series via podcast by going to blogtalkradio.com/richerlife or find them wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for joining us. Be safe.
You've been listening to Living a Richer Life with Earl and Dr. Charlotte Grant Cobb. Thank you for joining us this evening, and we'll look forward to having you back again at the same time next Thursday.